Welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Oh, and this episode in particular, as they say, the struggle is real, but oh my god, the struggle is worth it.
Oh, yeah, the people's struggle is now my entertainment, my pasty North American-ass entertainment. Yes, you kill those white people, because they are assholes. An entire film of white assholes getting fucked over. This is the 2022 Indian Telugu language epic action historical revisionist superhero drama RRR from S.S. Rajamouli.
ఆదిలాబాద్ వచ్చినప్పుడు ఓ చిన్నపిల్లని తీసుకొచ్చారు. మీరు తీసుకొచ్చింది గోండ్ల పిల్లనండి. అయితే వాళ్ళకి ఏమైనా రెండు కొమ్మలు ఉంటాయా? ఒక కాపరు ఉంటాడు. పులిని పట్టుకోవాలంటే వేటగాడు కావాలి. ఆ పని చేయగలిగేది ఒక్కడే సార్.
బాణం కన్నా విలువైన నీ సోపతి నా సొంతం అన్నా. గర్వంతోకి మనలో కలిసిపోతనే
బ్రిటిష్ ప్రభుత్వానికి ఎదురు తిరిగిన నేరానికి నేను అరెస్ట్ చేస్తున్నాను.
తొంగి తొంగి నక్కి నక్కే కాదే, తొక్కుకుంటూ పోవాలి. ఎదురొచ్చిన ఏసుకుంటూ పోవాలి.
చాలా ప్రమాదం, ప్రాణాలు పోతాయిరా. ఆనందంగా ఇచ్చేస్తాను బాబాయ్.
Brace yourself for wrong. Brace yourself for pain.
Him!
In Nakkala Veta Yanta Sepo, Kumbhastarani Battala Gordam Pada!
In large parts, anyway, Hindi Batman v Superman, and it is so much better.
Yeah, except it's actually like super fucking satisfying on every level. at equal parts, the good version of Batman versus Superman, and like Dr. Zhivago, but if instead of like recreating some classic novel straightforward or a historical piece, what we have is for Western listeners the equivalent of like Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln getting together to fight Hitler on the Titanic.
But with a middle section that suddenly goes, I think, Cyrano de Bergerac.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Like, why not?
Plus, to be very clear, not only Cyrano, but the classic Hindu mythological epics, Ramayana and Mahabharata. Like, this film goes places, and over the span of 3 hours, absolutely does everything it promises and more than you could ever fucking imagine, more than you could ever ask for from the West. What is theoretically a duo biopic of the revolutionaries and labor leaders Alluri Sitarama Raju and Komaram Bhim becomes Good Batman versus Superman is the only way to truly put this, due to its epicness of scale. For some reason, while watching, I kept getting fleeting feelings of watching stuff like Born on the 4th of July or Reds. And it's like, oh my God. And the fact that this one decides to go full on insane with the historical inaccuracies kind of makes those films work better as well. Because it's like, if you just give up and stop pretending that, like, the way that the West does Hollywood movies about history are historically accurate, and just go, nah, fuck it, fuck it, fuck it. Everything goes amazing. Everything is fantastic. This is the Indian Kingsman, essentially.
Yes! Yes!
And for the record, I loved the Kingsman. And it's because this kind of crap, this guy just like, nope, we can and we will fuck around in full stereo is just, oh, yes, yes. And this is coming from a director who, to be clear, he is the Kevin Feige of India. His films, I think he's only made like three technically himself, are the highest grossing in Indian history.
Nice.
And they're recent. And that includes this film. His other ones being, I can't remember the names. One second. His other films being Bahubali, The Beginning, and Bahubali 2, The Conclusion. Great goddamn titles. Great goddamn titles. Which you have absolutely seen GIFs of online because... Amazing. Like,
yeah,
this is Uwe Boll if Uwe Boll was capable. This is Steven Spielberg if he did a pile of fucking drugs every time he was about to say action. This is what Zack Snyder wishes he was.
So, just so that I'm clear, this is Uwe Boll if he had focused on something other than tax fraud.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and if he actually made his movies not to be essentially the meeting ground between Plan 9 from Outer Space and the producers.
Now, I'll also second, I had wanted to get to this earlier, but when you mentioned Zack Snyder, you actually gave me a better opportunity to do this. Quick notes to every single studio in Hollywood. Now, this movie is popular. This movie is successful. You're going to want to remake it. I know you are. I know you are.
Do not put Will Ferrell in this.
Don't.
Do not put Will Ferrell in this.
Don't you touch this movie.
No.
Because as I was watching it, the thought of a remake occurred to me. Because, you know, of course it did. And make no mistake, the first director that you will go to is Zack Snyder. Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
Yeah, that is a mistake and a misunderstanding, because this film has two incredible things that everything that man has ever made does not have. Actual human connection and compassion, and a sense of humor.
Well, three things. You forgot color.
And color. It's actually quite bright and colorful.
Yeah.
It's kind of stunning to see something this bright and colorful that isn't sarcastic. Like, I think the brightest and most colorful superhero stuff in the West is The Boys, because it's making fun of it.
Yeah.
And here it is in full glory and like picture quality that is truly gorgeous. Like, when you have all of the vibrancy of India, especially like that combination of Indian design and 1920s Western like fashions and technology, and you get that the Raj look. And then you put that up on HD 4K. Holy fucking shit. Stuff is pretty as fuck. Everything is pretty as fuck. Every single shot in this is not only optimized to be the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. Oh, yes. But just like, holy goddamn. My eyes are tired because they have been having too much fun.
Yeah, like, okay, on the one hand, it is the CG up to the general quality of your standard Hollywood film? No.
Depending.
But. Depending. But. I do have to say, they actually do work with it and almost cover that lower quality really goddamn well.
Well, and not only that, they make allowances for it. The emotional heft of the characters and the relationships is the grounding of this film. You're not coming to see the craziness. I mean, we came to see the craziness, but audiences weren't necessarily coming to see the craziness. They were coming to see these really well-done character pieces that, again, completely redefine the historical characters they're about. It has nothing to do with anything whatsoever. They made one of them a cop. He was a jungle gorilla. He was called, like, the hero of the jungle. None of these people were this film happened.
I think you're kind of blending the two leads together.
No. None of this film happened. Like, both of the characters are complete bullshit. One of them was like a pretending to be a Muslim craftsman to rescue.
Yeah, that was the hero of the jungle.
Never happened. No. Raju was the hero of the jungle. That's the funny thing is they completely flipped.
That was Bean.
No, historically, they completely flipped. Yeah, that's the funny thing is that this film is so inaccurate that they literally flipped their characters. They made one a cop who was a jungle gorilla, and they made the other guy who was a labor organizer a jungle gorilla infiltrating a city to commit a terrorist act, but also to save his sister while pretending to be Muslim. It's like, What?
Now
that was brave.
Also, when Crash refers to the one guy as a cop, like just to be clear, you know that kind of Bollywood stereotype of the cop character with the ridiculously good looks who can beat the shit out of almost 200 thugs and henchmen and not have a single hair fall out of place?
Yeah. But then when he gets his shit rocked later, he still looks great. Yeah. Goddamn. He does some morally deplorable shit in this film, especially to his best friend. Sweet Jesus. Yeah. But he looks great doing it. That guy's got he's fit. And then later on in the film, his hair and beard grow out, and he still has the rockin' mustache, over top it. And it's like, yes. Oh, and then he becomes an avatar of Rama. Anyway.
I was just going to say, he just out of nowhere just basically becomes a god. And by this point, you've already seen Beam going full on Captain America and just throwing motorcycles at people.
Oh, yeah. And, like,
so the you don't beautiful care.
Thing. Yeah, the beautiful thing about this film is all of it is foreshadowed. Like, it's craziness happens, but the craziness is foreshadowed. We do see a bow out in the woods at a shrine with arrows. You can just go take it. You know, like, everything is set up. Their incredible fighting prowess beforehand is set up and then explored in fantastic, like, character backstories during flashbacks at the end of the first and second act. beautifully timed and perfectly done to be both like refreshing and saccharine. Like, this film is so close to being a parody of a lot of bad ideas of Western film that it like falls into this beautiful, instead of like the uncanny valley of things that aren't quite right, this rockets up to the extraordinary peak, and up there is rarity. How the fuck did you end up there, Paddington 2? We don't know. Don't try to remake it. Lightning and bottles. It's just bottles of lightning and this film and Paddington 2 and the first Avengers. You know, it's just... don't ask how, don't ask why. Just know that they are. This film is incredible and perfect in the ways that, like, the fact that it is 3 hours long and the vast majority of it is usually in Hindi, Spanish, Telugu, if you can get
okay.
The original regional. None of it's dubbed in English. There are English characters in it, and when a main character talks to an English person, like a British person, they talk to them in English. But, like, it's an invasive language. It works really well, and holy shit, the bad guys in this are so good. Like, they're so cartoonishly evil.
Yeah, yeah.
When they finally get that motherfucker at the end, you're like, yeah, do it. It's truly wonderful to chant for, like, yeah, you kill that pasty bitch.
And
wait a minute. Yeah, kill.
and also, like, in all seriousness, let's be honest. There are people who are going to watch this and complain about how the white people are like every last one of them is just mustache twirling non-human cartoon villain, to which I would just like to say, this movie is from the view of the oppressed. Shut the fuck up.
And as well, there is one semi-decent white person, and the end dance includes her, so you can tell that she's one of the hero and protagonist like cast. She's the daughter of the evil son of a bitch of, I want to say, Viceroy,
Governor.
Governor, and his sadistic bitch wife.
Oh my god, oh. Yes!
Wow! Okay. Whoa! What a bitch.
But with the actress who played the daughter, Jenny. One thing I gotta ask, because this just jumped out of me like immediately. Okay, you remember the famous 90s Disney Tarzan?
Yes.
Now Jane in that movie. Jenny, I'm sorry, that is Jane in live action.
It really is.
She has been lifted straight out of the 90s animated Tarzan and given human form and then put into this movie.
And she just happens to be working in the South Asia market, not Hollywood, when they eventually come around to doing a live action Tarzan. This film actually, like, my reaction to the last 10 or 15 minutes of this film is not, oh my god, look how many white people they're slaughtering. It's, you know, I would love to work in Indian media as just, like, just get the paycheck and living in beautiful India as generic white asshole who gets it in the end.
Yeah, for me, when I watched it, it was... I think I started it at like 10:30, 11 at night, which, mistake.
Yeah, no.
Now, and just because I was basically exhausted, there were parts around in the middle where I had a lot of trouble keeping up with it. And I had to stop with about 40 minutes left and then finish the next day. That last roughly half hour is like the movie is going, okay, Winozo, you have stuck with us. Because you've come with us this far, we got you.
Yeah.
This is for you. Let's just have some fun.
To be very clear, it's not like, oh, you endured this and here's a reward.
No.
This film has no pacing issues. You do not notice that it is 3 hours long. It just, it goes, but it feels real time and detailed and steps work out. Like, there's a lot of scenes in this that remind me of, like, old-fashioned films, like from the fucking 40s and 50s and 60s, in terms of, like, plot movement and scenes in between scenes that today you just, like, take for granted or write in a different way that would be more exciting, say, like, visually spectacle exciting. And it includes these scenes as in many ways they were in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. I assume that's a throwback to, like, something about that really stuck in the local media, and it's become a mainstay of how they tell stories. And it works perfectly. You'd think that, like, holy shit, that should throw the balance of it entirely off by, like, Western standards, and it doesn't. It moves so wonderfully fast that I actually got to the final confrontation and realized it was the final confrontation because I looked at how much time was left, and it didn't feel like I had sat through 2 hours and 40 minutes.
No, fair enough. For me, it did. But again, I think that was more that just because of when I was watching it, like, I admittedly was exhausted. Like, in all seriousness, I do need to find the time in, like, mid-afternoon or something to sit down and watch this again.
Yeah.
Also, just because it's fucking insane and I want to.
Yeah, it deserves a proper rewatch in every regard. And
yeah,
if you can, at full fucking volume. Because even the audioscape of this is just beautiful. Because you have to layer in so much. Like, if you're doing an urban audioscape, you know, you get some vehicles, you get people walking, murmurs, various sounds like that, maybe a subway train or just crap like that. This is like five times a larger soundscape at any one moment without being invasive. It's just, it gives you a sense of how alive everything is. And it's just incidental background. Everything about this, even the sometimes shoddy CGI, the way that they use it to make up for the shoddiness, is just like, this is brilliant. This is some of the most brilliant fucking filmmaking I've ever seen in my life. Fuck.
Oh, yeah, no, like, they know exactly what they have, and Rajamouli uses all of it so goddamn well.
Like, I immediately must go see his other films.
Yeah.
Because I know from a fact, visually, they are just as, if not more, insane. And considering how well he was able to take these characters, these, like, you know, remodel and remake entirely these historical, real people, heroes in India and well known for their fights against, like, British oppression. And present them as this, completely fucking different, and yet have it be, like, heartfelt and, more importantly, popular and profitable. Damn, you have a secret sauce. What is your secret sauce?
Oh, God. And even, I think you touched on this earlier, like, This movie, I think almost just because it can, at the very end, goes full on DreamWorks by throwing in a dance number at the very end, because why the fuck not?
Well, as I as I've been led to believe, and as far as I can recall, that's how a big movie in India ends anyway. You have to have that, like, it's like the opposite of the Greek chorus, wherein you get immediate, complete, like, understanding that, and these characters, these good guys, the protagonists, lived happily ever after. And that's what it really is. It's just saying lived happily ever after, but representing it in this theatrical, you know, like this theatrical fashion.
And where those sequences in DreamWorks films can get irritating, here, the thing that jumped out at me was that all of these actors are so clearly just throwing down, going all out with these dance sequences and just having the time of their lives.
Oh yeah, like that must be every time the most enjoyable part of any film. And imagine like doing pretty much any film in your entire career, and every time, every single one of them, it's like, did you practice your steps for the big dance number at the end? Ah, fuck. Yeah, all right. I gotta go practice my goddamn dance steps. You know, it's just on top of everything. Imagine like you have like Daniel Day-Lewis and he's doing a dramatic film.
Yeah.
It's like you know, his Abraham Lincoln film, and he has to put in that level and intensity of a performance, but also be able to do a super intricate and high energy dance number at the very end, completely out of character, like smiling and dancing and happy the entire time. The film having ended just before he got shot in the head, mind you.
Of course. Of course.
At a theater. So what I'm saying is this should all end with a recreation in dance form that night at Ford's Theater.
Actually, I'm kind of legitimately curious what that would look like now.
The thing you have to remember about John Wilkes Booth is he was the Brad Pitt in the 90s of his time. If Brad Pitt in the 90s had a brother who was Daniel Day-Lewis, like way more competent actor, but not as good looking. Yeah, so like John Wilkes Booth was like voted once like the most charming and handsomest man in America. And then he killed the president at the theater where he performed Caesar. Or at least his brother did, and he was an understudy. Or maybe he was Brutus. I can't remember. It's all fucking stupid.
Actually, as you were saying, it just occurred to me, by that logic and the way you described him, there's an actor in this movie who could play John Wilkes Booth.
No, this is absolutely true. Raju could really, really do a good John Wilkes Booth.
Oh,
sexy as fuck. Great mustache.
as soon as you said charming and most handsome man in America, I was like,
oh yeah, yeah, the
wet that dude at the I can't remember what it actually was, so I'm gonna say Governor's Ball.
Yeah.
The racist as fuck potential suitor for Jenny, who is starts giving Beam a hard time because this guy is a dick.
Yeah.
And when it's a Bollywood movie, so a dance number has to break out.
Oh yeah, but what great and, dance number of just like, yeah, well, oh, white people said we can't dance. Uh-huh.
Wait a sec. Is this a Bollywood musical number? You bet your ass it is.
But yeah, like that guy, as I was picturing him as you were talking about John Wilkes Booth, and it was like, yeah, he's kind of perfect.
I really enjoyed when he got speared. That was fun.
Oh yeah, that was great. But like also with that dance number, I just got such a kick out of how It's like he of course totally humiliates Beam in terms of like Western dance. But then as soon as it goes, the Bollywood, like the Hindi dance number breaks out, and Beam and Raju just destroy everyone. And then they're like,
and
the two of us are still standing. Let's just battle each other.
Yeah, and it's hilarious and wonderful and hilarious and wonderful. And again, a great example of character building.
Yeah.
Where and when you can in interesting and fun ways. It was really well built. But like, also, may I just say, he looked like a complete fucking wanker doing those goddamn like European dizzy, like wiggling his goddamn like legs, doing Highland dance and shit. And it's like, yeah, no, that's definitely gonna show him. Oh yeah, he's afraid of you now. God.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, okay, yes, you can do a Highland dance number. Good for you, but time and a place.
Time and a place. Oh, you're busting out tango. Really, that's great. Nothing more awkward than watching one person tango.
Yeah, nothing about a seductive dance between two people being performed by one person. Nothing about that is the equivalent of the lead singer of Smash Mouth doing both parts of Under Pressure by himself.
You had to bring it up.
I was just gonna say, don't you dare put that sound clip in. No.
Okay. I won't put it in. I won't put it right here.
I think with this movie, there would only be one thing that I would have asked that they had done different. Just one thing.
Hmm.
Because like I said, there were points where I had trouble following the plot. Like, I got lost a few times. And I think what would have helped is a lot of the first act, it's almost divided into chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if that had been over the entire movie instead, I might have had an easier time, just because there's such a Pulp Fiction-esque non-linear structure to the way that this movie is laid out.
Yeah, it's another thing it does better than versions done here in live action. This is almost a better Avatar movie. Not James Cameron's Avatar, but The Last Airbender. Not literally, because it has nothing to do with it, but in terms of like pacing of a grander story and reveal of backstory. And it has very much the same approach of like, here's a lot of action, and then here's a scene slash episode where we have some character growth and exposition in which like someone tells their backstory, or incidentally someone has a flashback and you learn more about the greater world and their motivations. And so this very much had that approach, and you're right. If there was like, if they had continued the kind of good, the bad, and the ugly style title card intro that they had going on there, in terms of like a Tarantino-esque act and chapter breakdown, I think that would have been more straightforward for, say, audiences not familiar with the like Indian films, because as we said, like there are approaches to scenes and pacing that are slightly different, and it's that. Kind of, it's not necessarily that it's like, ooh, it's so difficult to follow because it's non-linear. It's not that. It's that the kinds of scenes that they use to give exposition and character, like, interactions with sometimes are simply not the kinds of scenes used anymore in the West. And so it's just like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
Why are we having this scene? Oh, it comes back 2 hours later? Oh, okay. Because it's not like foreshadowing like in the West where it goes, here's the thing. Do you see the thing? Do you see it? Good. Keep this in mind. Write it down. No forgetting. Write it down. You know, foreshadowing here is clumsy and shit. This movie, amazing. Just hints and tricks. The end, the epic, awesome end for the bad guy is hinted in a few lines of dialogue, but not only like hinted and then they go into it at the end. No, it's also coincidentally, or not coincidentally at all, because it's the reason that he uses this term, and like it's related to the phrase and the person who says it and everything. It's so wonderfully built. Like one character's entire driving force is a line that badassedly gets uttered at the end of the movie. To kill a motherfucker. Like,
Oh my god. The recurring bit about the cost of a bullet.
Yeah, the cost of a bullet being more than the worth of an Indian's life. And it comes up as, like, characters using it to oppress people. It comes up as the reaction to that being a reason, like, the entire fucking reason for one character's actions. And then being the finale for the very character who set that in motion by saying those words and having it literally kill him. Amazing. The setup in this is just every character has a road that could be their own film. As you said, like, this is two different films.
Yeah.
It's two different biographies.
I was actually just about to bring that up because, I had talked about earlier about how, like, it starts as an action film, and then it's suddenly a romantic comedy, like Cyrano de Bergerac, and then goes back to the action film. And we have made jokes in episodes, in past reviews, where films will try to do that, and it's so clunky and awkward. In fact, I think Ambulance holds our record for trying to do, I think, 7 movies at the same time.
Yeah.
I have never seen a Western film do that multiple movie thing as smoothly as this does.
Yeah, and like in a couple of different ways, like crossing genre, but also like to be really super super rich, like, oh my god, this is expert level work. One of our characters, Beam, is essentially the main character from Les Miserables, and his antagonist for the vast majority of it. I mean, like, obviously there's the white governor, he's the bad guy and everything, but his direct antagonist is essentially Javert.
Yeah.
But Javert is also his best friend, who then, after punishing him horribly, like an absolutely terrible assault, it joins his side, and they literally like kick to death every aristocrat in France. And then on the other hand, you've got this like seemingly for the vast majority of the film, like a cop drama about like this cop who's trying to rise up the ranks, and he's hunting terrorists, and he's infiltrating their cells and things, and it's like, oh, and it turns out that this guy he met is actually the ringleaders. Oh, these are separate films. They are completely separate films, and yet they mesh together perfectly. And at no point do you go, this is ridiculous, in a way that breaks the story rather than amplifying it.
Yeah, like where you have Raju as the cop who's trying to advance and basically join like the Indian equivalent of SWAT.
Yeah, a white-only organization, to be clear, until he manages to get in. He impresses so hard by being so brutal. And you're like, why? This character is a complete asshole, why? And the second act ends, the third act begins, and we get his tragic backstory and his mission to, no matter what, give weapons to a revolution and overthrow the British. It's like, oh my god, everything he has done has literally been for a greater national good. Everything. He's more committed than anyone he's fighting. Except, of course, Beam.
It's like, but it's like when the character is introduced, he's basically introduced by beating the shit out of an entire mob of rioters, and I'm talking like 2,000 people, just to arrest one dude.
Yeah, he actually, like there are characters, and it's because of that rich soundscape that you get. There are characters who die. He shoves people off a cliff, and thanks to the little inclusion of like crunches and stuff, it's like, no, that character's dead. Otherwise, you don't include those details unless you want someone to notice them. That's stagecraft, kids. And it's like he has literally murdered people in his introduction after, of course, as you say, beating the hell out of 200 or 400 people. Who the hell knows? It's a massive, massive crowd.
Yeah, whatever the number is, guy. It's way more than physically possible.
Yeah, he's a super cop in the worst way. And then he gets back to his superiors, and one of them goes, good job for beating the hell out of those people and killing a couple of them. And another one goes, I'm so goddamn afraid of him. And it's just, yeah. Oh, this is one of our heroes. Let me know when he's heroic. Lot of this film, you assume that Beam is the hero, and because he is. The flat out the good guy.
Like two scenes after all that, you see the promotion ceremony, and even after everything that you've just seen Raju do, he still gets passed over. And as the viewer, I'm sitting there going, what, why are you still there? Fast forward,
what is your motivation?
Minutes. Forward about 90 minutes. Oh, okay.
That's a really good reason. I mean, this guy's just here for the kid. Oh, wow. And like all of this wonderful detail and these interesting stories, these personal unique stories, like his backstory for the most part is actually vaguely true. His family and his village were pushed out in a similar way due to changes in farming restrictions under the British and land uses. So like his tragic history is why the actual person Raju became the hero of the jungle and all of that. Like it's why he became a guerrilla fighter and eventually was executed in like 1922 or 23, like pretty much when this movie takes place.
Yeah.
And then Bim did his stuff in the 1930s and 40s. Like these people never met. These people never met. These stories never occurred. Raju was never in the service of the Raj. He was a holy man, actually. Bim never went on a quest to save his sister and joined a cell where he befriended accidentally a high-ranking cop, and that did not happen.
No,
these things did not happen.
No,
it doesn't matter.
To put it in a context that really anyone would get, this is the equivalent of an absolutely incredible episode of Marvel's What If.
Yes, a Marvel's What If that also hoped that you didn't remember anything about history beyond like clothing and cars.
Yeah,
and a vague sense of oppression, which they roll hard with, but it's like, you want to go looking for facts? Don't. In fact, the director was just like, I'm not making a historical accurate film. I am making a beat them up. I'm going, rawr, smash, 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 smash. He calls it himself. He calls it a superhero film. And it's like, okay.
He's right.
This is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is about as historically accurate as Captain America is. And it doesn't hurt it or that. So
have
fun with that approach.
Yeah. Like again, Beam does throw a motorcycle at someone just like Captain America.
Yes, he does. And that is our introduction to this man, by the way, is he hunts and outruns and then kind of fights off. A wolf, and it's like, wow, that's pretty intense. Then the wolf gets hunted by a tiger that then, done with the wolf, goes after him.
Yeah.
Shit. So he traps and fights a tiger until he can, like, put it to sleep with something that he smashes on, like, some powder that he smashes on its nose. But while that works its way into the tiger's system, he has to hold it there and not fight back while this tiger goes fucking ham on his back.
I was just saying, like, again, for context, y'all remember that scene in Captain America, it was Civil War, I think it was, when Bucky is about to escape on the helicopter and Cap is holding the helicopter to the building just through his own sheer physical strength. Imagine that, but instead of a helicopter, it is a seriously pissed off tiger.
Yeah, the stakes are higher because it's not, oh no, my buddy's getting away. It's, this tiger's coming for your face.
Yeah.
And then the rope breaks.
Beam just has enough time to go, oh fuck, and then the sedative finally kicks in, like the absolute last second.
like, so well built, so well designed as an introduction to a character.
Yeah.
Because you get immediate senses of him. You get like his prowess, his strength, his intelligence. He's setting a trap. He's very fast. He's very strong. He can take a lot of pain. But also, like, his compassion. He's not killing or, like, hunting this tiger. He's putting it to sleep. Why? I wonder what that's for. More really good foreshadowing that comes up later.
Oh my god, that truck. Oh, that truck. That truck that should not have been physically capable of getting through that gate. But everything afterward, you immediately go, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. The second it spins around and the back opens and, like, one of every kind leaps out, hungry for blood. Amazing.
Yeah, like this truck is basically an enraged Noah's Ark.
Yeah, it's an anti-colonial Noah's Ark. It's like, here to end you.
Name the predator from the Indian jungle, and it's in one of those cages.
I'm kind of surprised that at no point did we not see, like, an elephant just rip through a wall, like a fortress wall, just in the background.
Like, I want to say that would almost be too cliche. But if
maybe they're not
could
in this part,
off.
I don't know. Yeah, like, yeah, this one could have had, like, paratrooper elephants, and I would have just been like, yes, of course! How historically accurate!
Operation Dumbo Drop as a Hindi action film!
And it literally cuts to the stars from Operation Dumbo Drop, those who are still with us, in the cockpit being like, what the fuck is going on? Bombs away! Danny Glover, a paycheck is a paycheck.
I was just gonna say, I want that just because, specifically because Danny Glover is still with us. That's the only reason.
Oh my god. And, like, yeah, despite the fact that ridiculous scene is not in this film, it's only, I think, because of runtime. Because everything else hit it. There's nothing on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, no, like,
but it doesn't feel overpacked. Oh, well, please, God, show this film to film students in the West so that we stop getting 3-hour long movies that feel like 4.
Zack Snyder.
Well, I don't even know if there's much else to say about this film, because it just gotta be like, oh my god, it's the best. Fuck, this is good.
It's, you know those stereotypical cliches of Indian action films and how ridiculous they are? They are all here, every last one of them. Is somewhere in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But everything around them has so much heart invested into it.
And everything makes mechanical, logical sense. Like, at the very end, as we discussed earlier, Raju appears seemingly as an avatar of Rama, his namesake. And... there's a not only is there, like, oh, the crossbow or the bow and arrows have been laid forward, like the outfit he's wearing was at the shrine there. It's not only that, to get this god lighting on him that looks over dramatic and stagey as all hell, they have the English lay in over the course of about 5 minutes of pre-scene. The fact that they have, like, searchlights. Bring the searchlights. We've got these searchlights. Use the searchlights. And the searchlights cast exactly in the right direction and tone to create this over-the-top, stagey appearance of him in this like godlike avatar, and it works. It's silly. No, it's amazing. Yeah. But you can see the mechanisms all go click, 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 click. It's oh my fucking god.
Yeah, I mean, brilliant. Again, the simple fact is, you are not getting that type of military equipment that deep into that forest, and you don't care.
Yeah. God,
and also just even just with the scene of him taking the bow and arrows from the statue. That's the Hindu equivalent of Excalibur. So again, I don't want to hear any goddamn complaining.
Yeah, no,
like that's exactly what that is.
And therefore. We already know he's a perfect shot. That was literally laid out. We know this because this film cares about character development and history and drive and reason in a way that makes sense, and it builds. So by the time he's one-shotting motherfuckers to death with a bow and arrow against, like, the modern British army circa 1920, none of this is surprising. We already know he's a superhuman because he like runs around carrying his friend on his on top of him, and they like forearm Goro punch shit. Incidental, coincidental. It doesn't matter. He is the best shot. Hawkeye ain't got shit on him. So everything makes sense. Everything works and makes sense. Everything.
Let's be honest. Hawkeye has the trick arrows because of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Tony Stark. Raju has spontaneous flaming arrows because fuck you, that's why.
Yeah, because fuck the British government. That's why.
I mean, at that point, you have already seen Beam kick a motorcycle that was speeding toward him, have it flip up in the air, then grab it and start bashing people with it.
Also, there's a actually the one technical error I can say that is in this film is due to the way the shots are placed. At one point, the governor levitates in midair, so his car flips and he gets thrown out, and so does his gun. And he grabs his gun and he holds it, and in midair he shoots the tires out of Raju's car, and that car flips as well immediately. But he holds in place for the next couple of shots while watching. He levitates.
I want to say that I missed that, but to be perfectly honest, by that point, he could have pulled out a lightsaber and I would have been fine with it.
Oh, no. My only disappointment with it is, like, and the only reason I think it was just a minor error that you're not supposed to notice is that they didn't just cut back to a wider shot where he's literally floating there in midair and just lowers himself slowly and like, from the pure haughtiness, he's able to fly.
Yeah, like, I was just gonna say, like, he could have been in midair just quoting Emperor Palpatine, and by that point, make no mistake, I would have accepted all of it.
I think he's more of a Frieza myself.
I mean, fair. Like, so this is so anime that I was gonna say that. Yeah, maybe the lyrics from the songs should not have been translated because in English they don't make a lick of goddamn sense. But,
no, I demand it. It's perfect. It's perfect.
But I was going to say, if you're an anime fan, oh, you will be in heaven.
Let's go, killing go.
these lyrics are lifted out of just about any anime you have ever watched.
And I love that when they do make sense, it doesn't make, like, narrative sense in terms of how we tell stories in song in the West. Because it would be like a full sentence. And it's just like, and then they went to the spring and held hands and were best friends. It's like, what? What? That's what the last like 10 seconds of epic singing has been, because it sounded really badass.
Yeah.
And you're talking about holding hands at a spring. Oh, that's beautiful. But what?
Yeah, like when you read it, it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Yeah.
You don't fucking care. You don't care.
It's like, this movie is if Robin Hood and Beowulf went to Las Vegas.
Can we get this guy to make that movie? I would watch but I only if he does it.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to see what he does next. I don't care if I understand it or not. I'm not here for that. I'm here for, oh my fucking god, yes, yes, yes. 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10, 1500 out of 10. The British out of India, very sorry about the whole thing. Holy crap, what an amazing film.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, like I said, there were points where I got a bit lost, but that final act made up for all of that with more interest than the world economy has seen in the last 75 years.
High interest rates in this movie. High interest rates in this movie.
Like, I love the cinematically ridiculous. We all know this. Because my love of bad movies stems from the fact that, look, if you're going to be bad, just get as silly as you can.
Yeah, go all out. Go all out. And this is proof that not only can it work creatively and artistically and even structurally, it can work financially.
Yeah.
Like, internationally. I mean, it's one thing for a film to, like, go international from the West and end up in India or Japan or China or whatever. But for this to end up here and be a success. Yeah. My God, that's something special.
Yeah, like, in the middle, you have that love story between Jenny and Beam that's just so adorable. That I'm just like, aww. And then that final act where I switch from aww to thank you, thank you. That was my cinematic nirvana.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of everything. So it's got a little bit of something for everything, and I suspect that that's like part of the approach to like demographics and viewership in India. It's less of a like, oh, we're selling this to nerds, or this movie's for 18 to 31s. You know, it's more like, listen, motherfucker, if you can't get everyone stuffed into that theater, then what the fuck are you doing?
Frankly, yeah, and that's, in a way, that's actually the best way to watch this movie. Like, have a bunch of friends over, bunch of snacks, drinks. You were going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you will have a dance sequence and soundtrack that will just fuel the party that you will have after the movie is goddamn done.
Yeah, this is a movie you could watch with 13-year-old boys or your grandmother, and all will have fun.
Exactly.
Unless your grandmother was a big fan of The Raj. We'll see.
Yeah.
Not salsa, not flamenco, my brother. Do you know? Desi Nach?
What's Desi Nach?
बैल जैसे धूल उड़ा के सींग उठा के तुम भी नाचो, बाजे जम के ताल ढोल बेटा राजू उड़ के नाचो,
हीरो से भी तेज कोई कर सके जो बेद नाचो,
अस्तबल में घोड़े जैसे पाक डोर छोड़ नाचो,
मिट्टी जो तो रोट मोटा मिर्च खा के ऐसे नाचो,
हाँ जा छोरे हाँ जा गोरे हाँ जा छोरे नाचो 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 वीर नाचो 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 यार नाचो
I've had enough of this nonsense. You two out.
But if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, leave a comment, or send us an email and let us know how awesome we have been, how great this movie is, and if you disagree with any of it or like are upset about this movie.
What do we care?
Yeah. But, you know, send some to Mike.
And if you really need me to mock your dissatisfaction, option one would be to contact the show at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. You can reach me directly at the Mara Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. The show is Real Geeks HFX on Twitter, or me by email at themaratimelord@gmail.com. I mean, I'm going to make fun of you either way, but you have options.
And if you must get in touch with me, or if you want to follow, hey, please contact me at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and at Crash and Burn everywhere else. What are we watching next time?
I'm not 100% sure right now.
Oh, I love that movie.
Basically, right now, my usual streaming options are kind of up in the air, and I don't know when everything's gonna be back to normal. But if nothing else, if I have to go theatrical, I'm thinking 3,000 Years of Longing.
Ooh, okay. George Miller. All right.
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
So that's probably going to be our next review. The next B-roll is going to go one of two ways, where if my streaming is back to its regular service in time and I can get caught up, we can deep dive on She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Or if that doesn't work, and if you've seen my TikTok recently when it comes to She-Hulk, there are things I'm going to have to say.
Oh, boy. And I just like talking about She-Hulk.
But if that doesn't work out, needless to say, Warner Brothers has been good to us in the past and continues to do so.
They're generous to us, their shareholders, and no one else.
So yeah, basically, we have options.
So look forward to that in a few days. Sorry that our kind of we flipped our schedule again. Ha 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 ha! We are back to Tuesday movie releases. Fuck.
I love how I've been trying to figure out how we were gonna do that, and then it just happened.
Yeah, you just gotta go with it. That's my approach to everything. Don't worry about it. Just roll with it. Just roll with it. It's cool. It's all good. Whatever. Cool breeze. Keanu.
Oh, exactly.
Well, we will see you on next time. Goodbye.
See ya.